Welcome to Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show, your place for a detailed analysis of each episode of Star Trek Discovery. Now here are your hosts, Sean Ray and Rick Tatro.
Hello everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. My name is Sean Ray, and this is the show where we analyze every aspect of each episode of Star Trek Discovery. And this week we're going to be talking about the third episode of Season 1, which is called Context is for Kings, and it was directed by Akiva Goldsman. And joining me tonight, Rick can't make it, but my Cosmic Potato co-host, Mr. John Irons, is here. John, how are you?
I am well, sir.
And our guest tonight is the writer responsible for the comic series Bizarre New World and the co-host of the Castle Rock TV podcast, Mr. Skipper Martin. Skipper, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. I'm happy to be here.
So, we've got a little bit of stuff to talk about tonight, but before we dig into this week's episode, Skipper, why don't you kind of give us an idea of how you felt about the first two episodes leading up to the one that we watched yesterday?
Do you always put your guests on the spot like this?
I do.
He does.
Okay. All right. I'm game. Ooh, I think this is the kind of show. I'm coming at this fresh, as fresh as a newborn babe. I did watch the first two episodes last week. They left very, very little impression on me. I got up yesterday knowing that there was going to be a third show. I tried again to watch episodes 1 and 2 and struggled to get through them. And they're not bad. And I think it would be very easy. It's very tempting to just go, it sucks. And it's easy to say that. I don't think Star Trek Discovery qualifies as sucks. It doesn't suck. I'm just not particularly interested. I'm not really caring about the characters. I don't really care. I find myself to be awfully bored most of the time. And there's a lot of good stuff to like, but it doesn't really feel like Star Trek. It feels like the name Star Trek slapped on something that kind of sort of resembles it. And it's difficult for me to care. And for all I know, there were plenty of original Trekkers way back in, you know, what, 87 or whatever, when Next Generation came out, and they said the same thing. And that might not be a particularly unfair thing to say about episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
But I'm trying not to unload hate on it, but I'm not in love with it either. And I didn't feel this way about the Deep Space Nine pilot. I didn't feel this way about the Voyager pilot or the Enterprise pilot. So I'm not sure how that bodes, but I can't say. I probably would not have. I could have waited a little while to see episode 3 when it came out. I only watched it because I was coming on here. How's that?
Did it? Well, go ahead. Sorry.
No. Go ahead, John.
Well, I don't want to jump ahead and ask if it changed your opinion. I'm guessing that it might not.
Good guess. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of prequels. I really feel that Enterprise was a decent prequel. I'm not saying Enterprise was an amazing show, but I enjoyed that it was at least – it was before Kirk, and you could see that just in the tech alone. You know, it was kind of – current day NASA, but a little bit forward. The ship was older and slower, and the weapons weren't as, you know, powerful and things like that. And I guess I appreciated it on that kind of level. It seemed to be a nice bridge between today and original series. This is trying. It feels like prequel in name only, because it's the obvious answer is that it's so high tech. So it makes no sense that this happens before Kirk. Okay, you kind of let that go. But then Vulcans are there, but it feels a little fan servicey. And then you have a human who grew up on Vulcan, but apparently Vulcans are just like humans because now she can do a nerve pinch, which makes no fucking sense to me. But you know, that's just weird. And then you take her as a character. I was I'm honestly going to be listening to you guys to change my mind. So, you know, no pressure, but it's on you guys now. So because the show didn't convince me that I should keep watching. So maybe you guys will do a better job of telling me, no, this is worth paying attention to. I'm not a hater. I did not like the idea of a prequel, and you got me there. But I tried to go in with an open mind, and it's a beautiful looking show. Totally. I like Michelle Yeoh, but I didn't think she was particularly interesting here. I'm sorry, what is her name, the lead, Michael, but she's played by
Sonequa Martin.
Sonequa, honestly, she just looked like she was posing a lot. There just seemed to be so much posing that it was difficult for me to care. And then you're supposed to kind of believe that she was influenced because she grew up on Vulcan, that she acts like a wet blanket and is completely uninteresting. Well, maybe that's not a good choice for your lead that I'm supposed to care about. So, but she's supposed to be part human, and they tried to give her those scenes to make her kind of care or somebody I'm supposed to care about, but I never did. And okay, I have the question. I kept asking my girlfriend 3 or 4 times during the show. So you guys are now my girlfriend. Take that as you will. Please explain to me something that I just kept getting so angry. I did get angry. I became a hater halfway through the show, and the show did it to me. I promise you, it wasn't built in.
Okay.
Why the fuck? Oh, am I allowed to curse?
Yeah, you are.
Good. Fucking A. Why the fuck is she such a pariah? What the hell did she do to cause such hatred that everyone just cannot stand her? Because the only thing that I saw was that she was kind of an idiot by going down there and landing on the ship. But it's pretty clear the Klingons were going to come out anyways. Then she committed mutiny, but that didn't seem to truly matter. Sorry, please help me out here.
No, the you're right though. I mean, everything that happened in the episode would have happened whether she committed mutiny or not. But I think that the mutiny is the stink that's on her that everybody's smelling. You know, it's like I said, it's kind of the argument that we had on the Cosmic Potato a couple of shows back about Indiana Jones and the fact that no matter what he did in Raiders of the Lost Ark, everything would have happened anyway. I think everything would have happened whether she had committed mutiny or not. But the fact that she did commit mutiny kind of, caused a problem with the way everybody's looking at her.
And mutiny, too, is unheard of, apparently, at this point in Starfleet. Like, no one had ever committed mutiny. And especially, so the people, like, in the inner circle who actually know, who were there, know that she turned on her captain and tried to take over the ship. Which is really, really bad. But radiating out from that, the people who know less and less and less and heard, you know, third hand and fourth hand, oh, that's the one who started the war with the Klingons. That's the one who, you know, all her shipmates are, you know, these various ships blown up. That's the one who did this, who did that. So all of this is on her shoulders. Some of it fairly, some of it not. But that's why.
Yeah, and you saw the girl on the transport at the beginning that was basically blaming her for the death of her friend that was on the
Europa.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are looking at her like everybody that they know that's died in the last 6 months. It's her fault, you know. Even though the Klingons would have attacked anyway, you know, but I guess the fact that she. That Klingon that she killed, that was an accident, right? It looked like an accident to me.
They're not really mad at her for that. They're not really mad at her for that. And frankly, if it hadn't been the Shenzhou, it would have been some other ship. Because, I mean, you know, because they were lying in wait. It was bait. So, you know, the war was going to start. Somebody was going to do it. The thing that everyone on our side is mad at her for was the mutiny.
But think about that. Unpack that for a second.
Well, not just the mutiny. Mutiny and that she... Aside from committing mutiny and taking over the ship, she did it so that she could fire a preemptive strike on another vessel, which is, like, you know, the most verboten of Starfleetness.
Okay, back up for a second. Let's say, as a central conceit to the show, I'm in the pitch meeting. Okay, I got this great idea for Star Trek Discovery. This officer is going to be hated by everybody because she committed the ultimate mutiny that launched a war with the Klingons or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. As a concept, okay, fine. Maybe I'm just being a real asshole here. But if that is going to be the central conceit that's going to make everybody hate her, I think it needs to be a little more, a little stronger, or presented stronger, because as I watched the show, what did she do, really? Well, she tried to warn people that Klingons were coming. She was right. She tried to take a preemptive strike, which was probably the right thing to do. She then went down with her captain to try to capture the leader. Again, she was right.
Well, yeah, that's Go ahead.
So she then, you know, tries to, you know, save her captain from being killed. She didn't, but she tried. So all of these things seem to be, and here's my disconnect. Those all seem to be what she's being blamed for. And then ultimately in the end, thousands and thousands and thousands of people die. Who gives a shit if she stood on the bridge and went, I think this is a bad idea? Who cares? Thousands of fucking people died. I don't care about this one idiot who had, she was mutinous. Big fucking deal. That wasn't the reason that the Klingons attacked. That wasn't the reason anyone died. That wasn't even the reason the captain died. Just because she committed mutiny didn't cause any of that. Thousands of fucking people died. I don't care about this one idiot who had on one lone ship that no one's going to remember. She committed mutiny. Who gives a fuck? But then take it one step farther. She as a character seems to be persecuting herself, stoically sitting there acting like she deserves this. Oh, just let me go. I don't care. Just put me back in prison. Just let me go. I don't want to be a part of it. As if she is blaming herself for something, but she did nothing wrong. So as a character, let me give you an example. I'm going to be the dick here. This is the writer in me speaking up. What if she's the fugitive? She's Harrison Ford. Okay. The entire Starfleet is blaming her, but she didn't do anything wrong. That's compelling. But she didn't act that way. She's acting like she's somehow guilty, but she didn't fucking do anything. I don't get why I'm supposed to care. Sorry, I went off on a tangent there.
No, that's fine. I would say this. I'd say you got two arguments. You got A, she didn't do anything that she deserves to feel guilty for. I guess that's the main argument. But she does feel guilty because from her perspective, she did do something she felt guilty for. And actually on the what did she do so wrong? I forgot you reminded me that she, they went down to capture the guy, Takuvma, but she killed him and she didn't kill him by accident. She didn't kill him in self-defense. She murdered him because he murdered the captain. So that was kind of, I think, her chance to, pretty much redeem herself. That was her chance to redeem herself, or at least to make it right. Was to capture him, and maybe they could prevent the war or allay it, maybe. I would say that was like her big mistake. That was the one time I would say where she acted rashly. Even the mutiny wasn't rash. Obviously it was mutinous, but there was a good reason for it. Killing Takuvma was, you know, pure emotion, and arguably is the reason the war really kicked off. Now, if you're saying she is not responsible for all those people who died, yeah, you're probably right, but that's not how she feels about it. And if you're saying that everyone shouldn't blame her because she's not responsible, yeah, you're probably right, but that's not how crowds of mob mentality thinks. They, you know, it is easy to blame a person. And I am sure, you know, everyone who can blames that person.
Yeah, and I think she feels more guilty about Captain Georgiou's death than she does anything else. Because she was the first officer, that was her job, was to protect her captain. and she wasn't able to do it. So, but this will be an interesting episode because the last couple of episodes, it's been a bunch of guys that are really excited about the show and had a lot of good things to say about it. So it'd be interesting to have somebody that didn't like it as much and get their opinion. I'll play, me and John will play the Christopher DeFilippis part. Since on Castle Rock TV, you guys never agree with each other. So.
Fair enough. So,
okay. Before we get into talking about the actual episode, I wanted to go over some of the news about the show itself that came out since the last time that we recorded. So, according to Nelson Media Research, 9.5 million viewers tuned in to watch the CBS broadcast of the Vulcan Hello last week. It was a little bit lower than they expected because it was delayed because of the football game. I think they were expecting more like 11 or 12 million, but 9.5 million is not bad for 2017. They can't exactly measure the online stuff the same way that they can TV, but we do know that it was the 19th most pirated video listed on the Pirate Bay last week. And the second episode was, anyway. And they are talking about that there's probably going to be a season 2, but you're probably going to have to wait until 2019 for it to come out, because the thing with TV shows of today that are being made for services other than traditional networks, they're not on a schedule like the networks are. So yeah, they can skip a year if they want, or they can skip 5 years like Curb Your Enthusiasm did, or they can skip 10 years like Red Dwarf did, you know. But since the second part of this season is going to end sometime in March of 2018, 2019, the early part is not too far of a stretch for that. I don't think, but one more thing, I have a piece of information to include here because, John, you remember on the last, it may not have been the last week's episode, but the one before where we were trying to pinpoint exactly where the timeline is for this show. We know it's 10 years before the original series, but we were trying to determine where it was in relation to The Cage, which is the pilot for Star Trek that had Captain Pike. And I started reading the novel Desperate Hours that came out this week. It's written by, forgive me, I forget his name now. But it's the first novel based on Discovery that came out, and it says at the beginning of it that novel takes place a year before the Vulcan Hello, and it takes place 1 year after the events of The Cage. So the Vulcan Hello, the pilot, takes place 2 years, is out there somewhere. They're wearing those gold and blue uniform and red uniforms. and Captain Hunter, Jeffrey Hunter played Captain Pike, but Captain Pike is in charge of the Enterprise. And I'm thinking maybe in a future season, I don't think they would do it this season, but maybe in a future season, we might get Captain Pike as a character. The Enterprise might be involved. Maybe they'll show us what happened that led to him being in that wheelchair when he was in the menagerie in Star Trek's proper series. But yeah, I just want to throw that stuff out before we get into talking about episode 3. So, let's do a non-spoiler kind of review of the episode first, and then we'll have a plot summary and we'll get into the spoiler stuff. So, what were some things about episode 3 that you did like, John?
Nothing. No, I'm sorry. I liked that. No spoilers yet, right?
Not yet. Yeah.
I liked the dialogue. That's really hard to do without spoilers. I'm intrigued by the new characters that we meet. They could easily be annoying and cookie cutter, and I'm hoping that they're not. but I'm looking forward to see where they go with them. I like that. I think it's probably not a spoiler to say that Discovery is a science vessel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am hopeful. See, for me to do this without spoiling, I can only say like things that I hope are going to happen but haven't happened. Okay. The things that I like that did happen are spoilers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get into it in a second. Skipper, what'd you think of this episode?
Let's see. The credits.
I do like the credits.
So let me ask you this, Skipper.
Sure, please.
You said, you know, you're kind of hoping we can convince you. What would it take to convince you? Like, what would
have to change? I honestly don't think it's possible. And I don't mean that as a negative, Nelly. I enjoyed Jason Isaacs' character. He was at least forceful. You know, he was at least there. Michelle Yeoh's character was so wishy-washy. She was just kind of there as the mentor and, you know, with her wry smile and things like that and, you know, maybe a little bit of sarcasm. But she wasn't particularly distinct. No one on the bridge was interesting at all except for Doug Jones's character. Everyone else was just kind of there. Couldn't give you a single name. That should tell you something. Not a single person.
Names. One of them, the computery guy.
The computery guy. Okay. But see, therein lies the problem. I kind of need more of an anchor. I'd like to care. Well, who the hell am I supposed to care about? The emotionless bitch who doesn't care about nothing? You know? I should care. Oh, well, yeah. I really need to care about her. The captain who's just kind of there, who wants her to get her own ship, whatever. I mean, I guess my problem is the Klingons didn't seem to be, you know, didn't look or act like Klingons very much. The Vulcans kind of acted like Vulcans, so that I at least recognize. The actor who played Sarek, and, you know, the Vulcans are the Vulcans. They didn't really mess with them too much. And then everyone else is kind of generic, so they don't stand out, except Doug Jones's character, who finally gets some more interesting things to do. I mean, he at least has something to bring to it, but it's not very much. It's a pretty bland soup. So then you get to the third one, where we finally get to the ship Discovery, and yeah, you could see what they're trying to do. You know, okay, here is a really interesting MacGuffin. There's this scientific, you know, goal that they're trying to reach. And there's this war that they're trying to win. And I don't know. I just didn't feel the pressure. I didn't feel the intensity. All these people died, but I didn't feel the weight of their death. You know, instead, all I really have to hang my hat on is some derpy little nerd girl that she's stuck in her room with. Who, I mean, that's all I could think of was that she was some, you know, she's just stuck in there to appeal to the uncomfortable nerd who just can't talk to people, you know. And again, she doesn't have a name, or at least she probably does, but nothing that is particularly distinct.
Tilly.
Yeah. So
Sylvia Tilly.
There were just little moments, but it just doesn't add up to anything. Nothing matters. Nothing seems to matter. It's a lot of talk. And when the action happens, since I don't care about the characters, it becomes pretty brainless. And then it's just kind of with a little garnish of Star Trek on it. Oh, here's a Tribble. Here's a phaser. But nothing matters. I mean, a Tribble, to put the Tribble there is so... I don't want to say I'm insulted because I'm not the ultimate Trekker. I'm not even remotely close. I don't take such ownership over the original series at how dare you. But let's just look at it from the most basic point of view. Unless you tell me that fucking thing is neutered, well, having it alive sitting on your desk is a bit of a hazard, but it's sitting there for, it's not sitting there for any other reason than to make Trek people go, oh, look, it's a Tribble. That's the only reason it's there. And the whole show seemed to only have that kind of window dressing attitude of, well, it's Trek because we say it is. And the biggest part, my girlfriend really, you know, crystallizes, and it's so simple. It doesn't feel at all like Star Trek. You know, humanity is supposed to be past all of these, you know, it's supposed to be over these petty problems. And if we are, if this is a series where we are going to get over that by the end of the series, again, it's too wishy-washy for me to see that coming. And so it just doesn't feel like Trek, certainly doesn't look like Trek. It looks like J.J. Abrams' Trek, which I'm not even that pissed off about that. But to call it a prequel, I don't know. The whole thing just feels like it doesn't have its identity figured out at all. And so it's all just a mishmash of stuff that I guess I'm supposed to care about. But at the end, I just shrugged. And I went, well, I guess I'm ready for tomorrow's podcast, so I'm kind of glad I watched it. But that's about it. So, you know, this is the kind of show that I would, if I didn't come on the show, I wouldn't even bother until it was over and then let people tell me, oh my God, it's worth seeing. And then I would binge the whole thing. But that's not the point of the show. The show itself is supposed to get me to come back, and it's failing pretty badly there. And I'm not a hater. I want this thing to be good. If I'm looking for things I like, Jason Isaacs is always fucking great, even with the goofy sneakers that he's wearing, that everyone's wearing, even in his goofy sneakers and, you know, silly looking outfit. He's awesome. That's about it.
I can give you a reason for the Tribble that I made up in my head.
Please.
As you say, and as we all know, a Tribble alone is like always basically. So a lone Tribble means you've altered that Tribble. And I took that as an indication of, you know, this cute cuddly thing that this science ship, they do all kinds of, basically it's a ship kind of a mad scientist. Well-intentioned, Starfleet sanctioned mad scientists who are all doing weird experiments on stuff to, you know, try to get an advantage in the war or just in general. And a lone, non-reproductive Tribble, to me, is an indication that they will do things, they will perform unholy experiments on cute and cuddlies in the name of science.
So you took it as that was an abortion trophy sitting on the table. Not an abortion trophy, a neutered trophy that was sitting there as some kind of symbol. Well, we will take down, you know, the Klingons' ultimate, you know, fear, and we will just wear it as a badge of honor. Something to that effect?
No, just that they, as an indication, I guess trophy is probably right, but not so much about the Klingons, more about, we are science, and our science will solve any problem, even the ones that aren't necessarily problems for other things.
Sean? Sean, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
He's reaching. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. He's so reaching.
I did preface it.
Okay. All right. You know what? Enough of my negative bullshit. Tell me what's so damn great about this show. I mean, you're not going to I don't believe you can change my mind, but please, what's so great about it?
I'm not going to say that it's great, because it's just starting. It's definitely different. But you said that it didn't feel like Trek. I thought that this episode felt more like Star Trek than the last episode did. I don't know if it was just when they got onto the ship. I felt like that ship felt a little more Federation. Even though the last one had all the sound effects and everything. But I think that the fact that the Klingons looked so different and they were so prevalent in those two episodes kind of made it feel a lot different than the Trek that we've seen before. This one felt a little more, not necessarily like TNG and Deep Space Nine, but it felt a little more Enterprise-ish, you know, the uniforms and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's too early in the series for me to say that it's a great show, but I mean, it's definitely one that I'm interested in and I'm invested in to find out where it's going to go. But what I liked about this episode was that it was a continuation of those characters, as far as the Michael Burnham character and the Saru character. We got to see a continuation of them without really focusing on the Klingons. You know, there was only one Klingon in this episode, and there wasn't any more. It wasn't like the last one. There wasn't battles with the Klingons and stuff like that. They went in a different direction with this, so that they could do some character development, and I'm sure we'll get plenty of Klingons on down the road. But let's get into the episode proper, and we'll start doing spoilers and stuff. But John, you want to give us a plot summary?
Sure.
See how enthused he sounds. Come on.
No, this is me scrolling. I've got like too many windows open. Like, which word I put that? All right, here we go. The non-spoiler review. Context is for kings. I like that name, by the way. This episode takes place 6 months after the events of the last episode. It begins with Burnham in the midst of a prisoner transfer. There's a problem with the ship. The passengers are rescued by Federation ship Discovery while the shuttle is repaired. At this point, the Federation is embroiled in a war with the Klingons, and Burnham is infamous for starting it. She is the only mutineer in the history of Starfleet and the subject of scorn and malignment from pretty much everyone she meets. While she doesn't disagree with their assessments, that does not mean she'll roll over and take smack from just random space convicts. Burnham and the audience is introduced to some of the crew members of the Discovery, including the no-nonsense Chief of Security Landry, the moderately mysterious Captain Lorca. If you listen to the last episode, you will note that I totally called that someone would ask her about her name and exactly how that went down. I nailed it.
Yes, you did.
Anyone who hasn't seen it yet, you shouldn't have been listening to this yet anyway, so it's your fault. Burnham says shit.
Yes, she did.
Which was awesome, because that's what one would say in that situation. And it didn't occur to me that she could do that until she did it. And I was like, oh yeah, she could totally do that. We learned that the Discovery is a cutting-edge science vessel, like sci-fi, fringy, good news, everyone, science vessel. I personally would love it if the episodes were devoted to various experiments happening in various little, you know, parts of the ship with the war as a backdrop, but it's more likely that the show will follow one project in particular, the work of Lieutenant Stamets, who studies fungi in space, and whose work may be the key to a new kind of faster-than-light travel. I say maybe because the Discovery sister ship, the Glenn, got screwed royally when their more advanced experiments went wrong. Stamets, and just, again, autocorrect keeps turning that into steamiest for some reason, which was weird, takes a team to retrieve the top secret data and find out what went wrong. And remember when I said the Glenn crew was royally screwed? That was literal. Their bodies were mangled like some gruesome red shirt pretzel twists. But that's not the worst part. They discovered the Klingons boarded the ship after the accident. And also not the worst part, because the worst part is the alien rodent of unusual size that killed all the Klingons and then attacked the boarding party. Burnham leads the beasts away, allowing everyone to escape back on the Discovery. Lorca offers her a place on the Discovery. She initially refuses because he thinks that she's a rebel. And he can use her to break whatever Starfleet regulations need breaking. But he knew she'd think that. And he assures her that he only wants her for her good qualities and not her bad qualities. And that she can help stop the war that she started. She agrees, and we're off. As an epilogue, we see Commander Landry and Captain Lorca in his bizarro menagerie, as she confirms that the creature, the Killy Killy creature, has been added to his collection. Dun dun dun.
Yeah, he was a collector. I mean, he had a Gorn skeleton in his office. And the Gorn.
But wouldn't you though, if you could?
Well, I mean, yeah, but at this point in the timeline, as far as I knew, they had not even met the Gorn yet, as far as the Federation. So that tells me that he's really into some top secret stuff if he has a skeleton of a creature that they technically haven't even met yet.
Yeah, that's...
like, in his office, so...
That's what I... So, yeah, now that we're spoiled, that's one of the things I liked about the show. That they... You know, because before the show aired, before the premiere aired, and, you know, people said, how could they have this kind of tech? That doesn't make sense. That was before Kirk didn't have that. But if you're basically on the cutting edge science vessel, if you're Fringe, if you're, you know, Q, the James Bond Q, not Star Trek Q.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, you can have that stuff. That's how you do it. Because you notice they did, like, the in-ship beaming, which, you know, I think Next Generation, when they did it, they're like, wow, I don't think anyone's ever tried this before. Okay, well.
I seem to remember them saying in the original series that's, I wish Rick was here to verify, but in the original series, they said something about the site-to-site transport inside the ship, that it was really dangerous to do because you could materialize inside of a bulkhead or something like
right.
that.
Yes. You know,
so the fact that they're doing it and doing it seamlessly 10 years before, you know, shows how advanced this ship was.
To get involved, he just told the computer to do it, and it was done.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
And if you notice, the effect was a much more Next Generation type beaming effect.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
What else did I like? I don't know if they were intentional little Walking Dead Easter eggs. But I felt like there were. I've been talking for a while, Sean or Skipper. You want to say something?
Yeah, Skipper, you got anything you want to add at this point?
For episode 3, I think I was more engaged. No pun intended. And probably all of that was due to Jason Isaacs. I really feel not to try and harp on something I've already said before, but as a crude example, the main conceit of Voyager is that they are, you know, ridiculously far from home, just trying to get home. Well, if that idea were muddied and they were kind of somewhere, but we're not really sure how far, and well, maybe it was their fault, but maybe it wasn't, and then maybe I wouldn't care so much. So for the central conceit of the show, for her to be this outlaw, so to speak, this pariah that everyone can't stand, I kind of wish that was more more important and more cut and dry, more, you know, something really that I can really grab onto and care about. Again, going back to Harrison Ford and The Fugitive, here's a guy who clearly was innocent and everyone hates him, and they're literally throwing his life down the drain. And so you feel for him when he breaks out. And I think that could have been a really great reason for me to care about this character. But she's not any of that. And even she is kind of wishy-washy. Well, she'll help, but she's not sure why. She feels bad about her captain, but she's a prisoner. Yada, yada, yada. So it just feels like so much wishy-washiness. It was nice to see Jason Isaacs walk on. This is how I feel, damn it.
Yeah.
Hey, wake up, people. We got a war going on, and we got shit to do. And it was nice to have somebody stand up and have a purpose. Even if I'm not exactly sure what his purpose is, he's there to win the damn war and find this new technology, and he's going to use whatever is at his disposal. Well, at least that's something. So it was nice to have somebody with very clear motivation that I enjoyed watching. And also, I think it really hurt the Michael character to make her kind of sort of Vulcan, because, again, that's a wishy-washy choice as opposed to a committed choice to make this character interesting. Well, she's kind of this, but she's also kind of this, and kind of isn't all that interesting to me. But
yeah,
they
can make her Vulcan when they want to make her Vulcan. Because they can say, oh yeah, this is where the Vulcan part of her comes out or whatever, you know. But I did like Jason Isaac's character Lorca, when he was addressing the crew there, and he told Stamets, "I'm getting kind of tired of having to tell you every day that we're at war." You know, one thing that I did notice is that first scene that we see Lorca in. First of all, the effect of the stars reflecting in his eye was really cool. But when he was talking about the fact that he had a battle injury and he had a sensitivity to light, I almost expected that Microsoft Word paperclip to pop up and say, "It looks like you're trying to do some foreshadowing." Would you like some help with that?
And a little clip waving at you. Hey!
Yeah.
Hey! Yeah. And then, you know, everyone in the audience is going, "Well, it's entirely too bright in this entire show for you then, isn't it, sir? Where are your sunglasses?"
Right, exactly. Yeah. He'll be wearing a Geordi visor. But yeah,
they don't have sunglasses in the future. Mm. They haven't cracked that technology yet.
Gotcha.
I did put in my notes that John got his wish that when Cadet Sylvia Tilly told Michael, "I've never met a female named Michael before. I think I'll call you Mickey. That's a little more approachable." She says, "No, you won't."
No, you won't. Yeah.
Saru was interesting in this episode because when she shows up on the Discovery, he's sitting there. He's the first officer. And it's been 6 months since she saw him. And, you know, he had a couple of pretty good quotable lines in this episode. He said, I intend to do a better job protecting my captain than you did yours. So he told her like what he thought. You know, he told her like it was. That she was a good officer until she wasn't. But yeah, we learned some things about the Discovery, that it is a science vessel, but it's obviously going on some top secret missions. That says that Saru tells her that the Discovery has been assigned to 300 discrete scientific missions, and then we see that we're told that the USS Glenn was attacked or something happened to it, and the crew was lost, and they send a crew over to the ship, and Michael goes with them. Lieutenant Stamets is in charge of that mission, and Lieutenant Stamets, let's talk about him for a second, because he's in charge of the science experiment that has to do with spores as the building blocks of energy. And he's named after a real guy. There's an actual scientist called Paul Stamets, and he's actually doing work in this area. He's a mycologist, and he's doing work in bioremediation, which is, it uses biological entities to neutralize contaminated sites and things like that. And he's also an advocate of medicinal mushrooms. So,
okay.
But they interviewed him. I don't know if you guys watched After Trek last night. They interviewed him for a few minutes on there. And this technology that they're working on basically is using some kind of spores that are supposedly spread throughout the universe, and they can kind of ride on them and use them as transportation so that they can instantly get to different points in the universe almost simultaneously, like within seconds. And what did they call it? They called it some kind of like biological drive or something like that, but biological propulsion. But obviously this is a technology that is lost in the future, or it doesn't go anywhere, or something happens to it, which kind of explains to me why the stuff on this ship that is so much more advanced than what we had on TOS, we don't see it on TOS, because a lot of this stuff, something's going to happen, and this stuff is going to be lost. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's an Atlantis situation.
Yeah.
So I would love if that was the show. Like if you know, these very, like, I mean, not as silly as Eureka, but you know, if that was a regular plot line of the show, was I'm working on this thing and this thing got loose, or I'm working on this thing and here's what we can do with it. I'm working on this thing and let's test it and see if we can use it against the Klingons. That's what I'm hoping the show will do. I mean, not that I don't care about the war with the Klingons, but I kind of don't. Like,
well, we know how it's going to work out.
Well, yeah,
I mean, there's going to be a treaty.
There is that. But even like, I don't like a war show. I'm not like, that's not my thing. Nor is, watching aliens chase astronauts through hallways. The alien monster then left. But fortunately, they didn't stretch it out. Like, they were on the ship for like 5-10 minutes. The Alice in Wonderland quote was weird.
Let's unpack that scene a little bit. Because they get over to the ship, and obviously something horrible has happened over there. There's bloody handprints on the walls. The crew is torn to pieces, and what parts of them are not torn to pieces are horribly disfigured. And it was a lot more graphic than anything I've ever seen in Star Trek before. Agreed?
Oh, totally. Absolutely,
yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. During the show, yeah. I think I've seen something like that on the movie, but yeah.
Well, this is their set designer that kind of did the work on the torn up bodies and stuff like that. I can't remember his name now, but he's done work on like Silent Hill and Resident Evil and stuff. So this is his bag, you know. He was a horror guy, so he set this scene up. This scene was basically a horror movie. You know, we see these bodies. We get chased by a monster. It was a pretty good looking monster. There was a Klingon there that I never could figure out why he was there. He was
like the last survivor of the little looting raiding party that showed up after the accident.
Okay, and he just looks at him and shushes him.
Yeah,
and then he gets killed by the monster. But then they're trying to escape, and Michael. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Michael. Distracts the monster long enough for them to get back to the shuttle, and she's crawling through the Jeffries tube with the monster behind her, and she's quoting Alice in Wonderland, the book. And later she tells Tilly that her mother used to read that story to her. But I don't think if I was being chased by a monster, I would be calm enough to be quoting works of ancient literature.
Well,
to myself,
I don't necessarily minded it. There was no setup for it, you know. Yeah. If on the last episode we had seen that book, if we had seen her that's quoting that book makes her calm or something, but without any context, I guess context is, I guess I'm not a king, without any understanding of why she was doing that at that moment, because it's not like we hadn't seen her in tough situations. Like, we've seen her in like 3 or 4 at this point, life or death situations. Maybe she just does it when she's alone. I don't know. Maybe it'll make more sense later, or it'll fit in more later. But even if she was like humming it, or just, if you could hear her thinking it, I don't know.
I had to rewind it to figure out what in the world she was saying. You know, because she just starts talking, and I thought she was talking to someone on her comm badge or something. But then I remembered they don't have comm badges yet.
Right.
They're supposed to use communicators. But she's just talking, so I rewound it and turned on the closed caption to see exactly what she's saying. It's like, it looks like she's quoting Alice in Wonderland. And yeah, that's what she was doing.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, I watched. I think I had the closed caption on when I watched it, so yeah. I don't know if I would have recognized it without that.
Skipper, what'd you think of this sequence, the horror sequence on the Glen?
It felt strange and kind of gratuitous fact. It's like, meant to shock me only because, well, here's something we don't do on Star Trek, and
yeah.
It for that purpose. Hey, it worked. Oh shit! Don't see that on Star Trek, and that's interesting. But and again, it just mostly left me cold. Oh well, this isn't Star Trek, or it just doesn't feel like Star Trek, and it just kept reinforcing my opinion that I don't know why I'm watching this. So, I mean, I guess it's okay. It's okay. It's fine. But it kind of all comes back to the central conceit of why, I'm not responding as well as I would like to. I don't feel like I know where I'm supposed to care or why, and it just feels muddied. And as you guys were talking, as you guys were giving some basic examples of where the show was going, and I'm like, you know, if I, you know, and this is a really shitty, stupid, sad, pathetic thing to do. Hence, why I'll do it. when writers do this to each other all the time, and I think it's a rather, you know, terrible and horrible thing to do. And but then I find, especially once it was done to me, I fucking hated it. Well, now I'll do it, which is okay. Can you explain, your central concept in a sentence or two? Well, you guys don't even have to verbalize the words. If I were to tell you as an assignment in two sentences or less, tell me what Voyager is about. You guys don't even have to create the words. You know you could do it.
Yeah.
You can rearrange the words in your head and you'll figure it out. What is the basic concept of Deep Space Nine? You guys could do it in two sentences or less. Not a problem. What is the central conceit of Star Trek or Star Trek The Next Generation? Same thing. What is this show?
I don't know that that's required.
I'm not saying it is. I'm not.
You're saying it's different. That's part of why it doesn't feel like Star Trek, because you can't do that now.
No, it's one of those things that it's reinforcing my I literally, when the show ended yesterday, I turned to my girlfriend. I said, "Why should I give a fuck?" And it's really simple. Do you give a shit? And why should I? Why should I even want to come back next week? For the Klingon War? For the technology they're discovering? To watch her become a respected officer again? Well, I don't even like her, so why do I give a shit? The point of this show is we're not going to tell you what it's about. Okay? It's got the Star Trek name. It's got a ship. They got phasers, and they got the insignia, and it's even got sound effects too. Woohoo! But what is the show about? Beats me, and we're not going to tell you. And by the end of the pilot, she's half Vulcan, and the captain is dead, and she's the mutineer, and so on and so on and so on. By the third episode, they are still unfolding what this thing is about. Oh, here's this ship Discovery, and here is what it's about, and here's this new captain. So it's like, you're right. It feels like the point of the show is we're not going to tell you what the point of the show is. And by the end of the – but you know, maybe by the end it will be revealed that this entire 10-episode, whatever it is, prequel is all about watching humanity ditch – all the problems humanity had. That's what the entire point of this first season is all about. And you're not going to know until you get to the end. Well, maybe that's going to unfold like an onion and be interesting. And that at least is intriguing. So congrats. You got me somewhat interested.
Thanks. Well, I mean, I do think that it is unfolded, and maybe that's part of it too. There are other sci-fi shows that I went in, I don't know anything about them. What's on sci-fi? Killjoys and Dark Matter. I knew nothing about Dark Matter, and that's actually part of the show. Like they wake up on a spaceship. They don't know who they are. I'm like, oh god, this thing again. what did I call it? The hangover syndrome.
Oh, okay.
We got to figure out why we're here. Blah blah blah. But. As you discover more, they discover more. I think that's why it doesn't really bother me, aside from the fact that it's Star Trek. But I shifted my expectations. You know, if you go in expecting Pepsi and you get milk, it's not going to be good. But I went in, I was like, you know what? I'm not sure what this is going to be, so let me just be open. And so, not expecting this standard, this is what the show is going to do in the pilot, I think helped me, pivot as needed. And I am intrigued enough. I like it. Obviously. But I can totally hear where you're coming from and why you don't. And I'm still going to, give them leeway But I think I would have liked it better if they had, if you had seen more of her journey from her Vulcan mentality to the more Starfleet mentality to the human mentality or whatever. So like you said, I mean, basically at this point, you know, at this point, she's just a person and she can be logical and she can be emotional. I'm like, well, then why, you know, you went through all this trouble of inserting her into, you know, Sarek's house and having her raised by a Vulcan. That needs to pay off in some way. Otherwise, she could just be, you know, kind of a stuffy person. So I'm optimistic that that'll come to pass.
What are you guys hearing in regards to feedback? I've seen a little bit, you know, a little bit of vitriol. I have not really gone out to look at reviews. What are you guys hearing from other Trek people? Are people loving the show? Are they indifferent? Are they a bunch of skippers? Or are they a bunch of Johns?
One side or the other. There's not a lot of in between. You've got a lot of people that obviously love the show, and you've got a lot of people that don't want to even give the show a chance. And the people that don't want to give the show a chance are mainly turned off because they have to pay for it, which is why it's number 19 on the pirate list.
So how many percentage would you say there are skippers who gave the show a chance and just aren't feeling it?
I haven't seen a lot of those because most of the people that I've seen that are hating on it really haven't even watched it. Or they watched that first episode that they could watch for free and were so mad that it ended on a cliffhanger. And I'm like, did you not realize it was going to end on a cliffhanger? Because they want you to come to CBS All Access and give them $6 so you can watch the next one. But then you've got the other people that don't like the fact that the tech is more advanced. They don't like the fact that the Klingons look, you know, we talked about all that stuff in the first episode. But I'm not seeing a lot of comments of people that have watched the show and just it hasn't really grabbed them. It's either, hey, I love this show, or I'm not even going to watch that show. I'm watching The Orville. You know, so
can I ask you about that?
What, The Orville?
Yeah, I mean, we could obviously do an entire hour on The Orville, but the basics. What do you guys individually think of The Orville?
We talked about a little bit of it last week, but it was I like the show. I just
going to hang around. I think we're going to talk about it on the next.
we're eventually going to do a whole episode of Cosmic Potato about it. But I like the show. I just don't like that it's basically just a generic Star Trek. It's like Seth MacFarlane is just trying to make Star Trek, but put. You know, put dick jokes in it, basically. But
John, how do you feel?
We've seen what, 4 episodes at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 episodes, 4 episodes. I was more forgiving earlier. I think this whatever happens Thursday is probably gonna make or break it for me. Because excuse me. I appreciate what they're, you know, that they are, you know, they're trying to be a legitimate sci-fi show in their own right. They're obviously, you know, borrowing heavily, let's say politely, from Star Trek.
Huh.
They are, you know, they're trying to do the Seth MacFarlane humor. Like, so they're trying to do a lot of things. They're trying to, you know, basically they're trying to be Galaxy Quest, but also kind of their own thing, which is fine, you know, good for you, but you need to pick a pony and run with it. And even not saying even as a total show, like if this is a funny episode, fine. If this is a serious episode, fine. If this is all sciencey, fine. But they're trying to do everything in the same episode, and so it negates itself. You know, they'll have like a decent, they'll have like a good plot, like a good sci-fi concept to start with. But then, like you said, dick jokes, But okay, well, if you're not taking it seriously, don't expect me to take it seriously. Not that you can't be funny in a sci-fi show, but just decide. Decide what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Like, if the stakes are high, if you're going to be silly, then make the stakes low. Or make everything in your universe silly. Or have just one guy who's silly. You know, yeah. Have everybody else be, like, you know, taking this seriously, and then have one Joker who's the Joker. But honestly, it's like 70% of the Orville is silly. The other 30% are not, and nobody that they encounter is. So they just look like a bunch of assholes rolling through the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm not interested in seeing.
The last episode was, it was like the whole plot was serious, but we've still got to throw these jokes in there. We've got to have, this scene's got to have this joke. This joke does not fit in the scene because this is a serious scene, but we're going to throw a joke in there anyway. And it did. And it wasn't a bad story. I mean, it was a decent science fiction story.
All of the plot lines from every episode I've seen has been a good plot line that could have been a good sci-fi show.
Yeah.
But they, again, if they're not going to take it seriously, why should I? And if they just had one person that they gave all this, I mean, that's why, like, True Blood basically did that. They had two characters who would say crazy shit. But everybody else took what was going on seriously. But, like, they got one more episode. That's all.
Well, if it wasn't Seth MacFarlane, I really don't think it would be on Fox. I think it would be on the Sci-Fi Channel somewhere or something like that. But are you enjoying it, Skipper?
I was talking to DeFilippis offline about it, and my opinion of the Orville is it's kind of like very similar to Discovery in that I kind of dislike it at the concept level. And then, no, just give it a shot and let it do its thing and see what it's doing. And what is the concept? Well, Seth MacFarlane is kind of a Kirkish-styled leading man. No, he's not. I mean, he's not even close. But okay, all right. Well, that would work as a comedy. As a comedy, him being Kirk, okay, that could work. But it doesn't. It's not funny enough. Okay. And yeah. So... is this show a Star Trek parody or is it a Star Trek ripoff? Okay, well, if it's not a parody, well, then it's a fucking blatant ripoff. Oh, no, it's a parody,
yeah.
But not really. So it kind of wants to play it both ways. Kind of like, the analogy I came up with was Superman Returns. Well, it's kind of a sequel to Superman 2, but it's kind of a reboot, but it's not, but it is. Hey. Did it work? No. Well, the Orville is kind of that. It wants you to laugh at the Star Trek isms. It wants you to enjoy the jokes. But then it also, at the same time, wants you to care and take ideas seriously. And you're right. Am I supposed to care? Or is this a half-hearted attempt? Oh, but don't worry. Just let that go because it's funny. But what if it's not that funny? Well, but it's trying to, have a real story, too. Was Seth MacFarlane as a leading man? Really? Okay. I mean, again, it tries, and it's kind of fun to watch it flail. it's like, I can kind of stand back and watch. Look at this thing trying. And then you got Brannon Braga, who directed probably the strongest episode so far in regards to them wanting to change the gender of their baby because that's, their race. Well, that's a serious, serious subject. And you could see Brannon Braga behind the scenes at his pottery wheel, molding it into a Star Trek episode, right? I know all the ingredients. Yeah. I know all the beats. And he's just sitting there building this thing, and then someone farts on it, and it all fucking, drips away, right? It's got some joke to kind of try to dissipate it. And then, unfortunately, there are too many things that take me out of it. So they stupidly, and this is absolute pure laziness on Seth MacFarlane's part. He's such a bad comedy writer that the only thing he can do is go to his DVD collection and make fun of stuff from current day and try to transplant that shit into the 24th century. You look like a hack. I mean, you really look like a jackass. Oh, I can't write a joke. Let me look at my DVD collection. Ha ha. There's an idea, and I'll just transplant that in. Now, you can get away with that once or twice. The problem is they're doing that at least 3 to 4 times in every episode. So you just look stupid. Well, golly, I wonder who wrote this. Take a guess. Well, so that kind of thing, it's weird because forget all of that. Take everything that I just dumped on my desk and shove it off. Clean slate. Just look at it for what it is. The funny thing is that it is more Star Trek than Discovery. And people are saying that for a reason, because the tone is there. Even if it's a copy of a copy of a copy through a fart joke lens, it's still trying to be Star Trek, right? And you feel
it. The social issues manifest through sci-fi allegory.
Yeah, it's there. It is trying to be, you know, TNG funny. TNG for the Comedy Channel, right? You know, it's from the costumes to, I mean, just everything. It all just feels like TNG. And
yeah, that's what they're going for, is to try and make it episodic like the old Star Trek was. But what Star Trek proper is trying to do is update it for 2017, where people binge stuff, you know. So you've got these storylines that last through an entire season instead of being in episodic format. So it kind of competes with each other. Star Trek itself is trying to update to the 21st century. The Orville is trying to play homage to what Star Trek was, you know, 20 years ago. So you've got competing things there, because I'm interested in seeing what Star Trek wants to do for the future, but I also have nostalgia for the way Star Trek used to feel. So I kind of get that fix by watching the Orville, and I kind of get my fix of seeing something different with Star Trek by watching.
No, that's perfectly put. I got a shitty question to ask both of you. This is admittedly a totally shitty question. Can you guys handle a shitty question?
Yeah, sure.
If you didn't know, if you could, you know, I'll break out the Men in Black deneuralizer and zap you both, and you just watch episode 1, 2, 3 of Discovery, you know, completely cold in a vacuum. Hey, guys, guess what? They're doing a new Star Trek. And this came, I hit you guys at 2012. I jump back in my fucking DeLorean. I jump out and go, hey, look, here's this new Star Trek from 2017. I want you guys just sit down and watch it. And then without any hype, you have no idea what you're watching. You just watch these three episodes. And at the end of those three episodes, I say to you one thing separately. You guys are in separate rooms. But just go with me here. I said it was shitty. Just go with me here. I then approach each one of you and say, do you believe me, yes or no? Brian Fuller, the name you saw at the beginning of the show, the guy who invented it, he ended up leaving the show before it even aired. Do you believe me, yes or no?
I believe you because episode 3, okay, Brian Fuller wrote the first two episodes, and you can feel a difference in those two episodes than in the third one. There's a shift of the entire story. It's almost like the first two episodes are a prologue for the rest of what we're going to see in the season. So yeah, I feel I could tell that there is a shift in tone between those first two episodes and the third one. So yeah, I could believe that there was somebody involved there that left,
right?
Or a different writer for the third one anyway.
Now, John, after you got over the fact that I fucked with you and said Donald Trump is president, forget that. And you went, oh, this is all bullshit.
Well, that was great. If you told me that first, then I wouldn't believe anything you said afterwards. So.
Exactly. Okay, so answer the question.
Yeah, I would. Because it is different, but again, I mean, that's I allow a lot of elasticity for creative types. So I would, you know, as long as it's still kind of in the same vein and I see similar elements, which I do, I would say, sure, I'll buy it. We're trying something a little different, but okay.
I'm so curious if the show, honestly, I'm being honest here. I'm wondering if the show is going to become something better than what it is. It's not terrible as is, but it's the kind of show that I could imagine that it's all going to connect into something bigger later, and I'm going to have to rewatch it to see all the things that led up to something that I don't even know. Is that possible? Totally.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for. Like, I agree with what you're saying, Sean, about the episodic. I would love that. I think, like, a good example of, like, each show with its own kind of thing of the week, but there were little bits and pieces that led to an overall season arc that you didn't really realize until later. Buffy did that well. Was it The Librarians? Not a great show, but it did that well. Eureka did that usually pretty well. My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic.
Does that well. How the hell did you get that in there? This guy's artist. How did you get Star Trek to My Little Pony? I don't know, man, that's genius.
It's right a good there. Show. I'm just but no, like in terms of like every episode has its own little plot, but there is a larger string that is going through the season that you may or may not realize until until they get to the finale. That's what I'm hoping for, because I really don't want one story that just unfolds week after week after week after week after week after week after week, where previously on, like, no. I'll do it, obviously. Like, I mean, I like shows like that, but I would also love, and that to me, you're talking about that Star Trek feel. That to me is part of what makes Star Trek also. Where are we going this week? What are we doing this week? What alien are we going to meet this week? I've got enough Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, and like I like those shows, but it would be nice to see a show where I can just watch an episode. And oh, that's the one with so and so. I can't aside from like the Red Wedding, I can't really name any episode of Game of Thrones because it's all one long story. I would.
Yeah, all those Marvel shows are the same way, like Luke Cage and all that. I can't tell you what happened in each episode, but I can tell you what happened in the show itself.
I can tell you what happened.
Kind of like Deep Space Nine.
Yeah,
guys.
Well, Deep Space Nine was episodic.
Example, they had season long arcs, but they also did have episode of the week kind of thing.
Yeah, they were the ones that kind of started that.
Yeah.
They weren't so overarching that there was one story that went from season premiere to season finale.
Or series premiere to series finale.
Yeah. But they would be episodic, and then they would have like a 3-episode arc, something like that. Without doing like the whole to be continued at the end.
That's what I would, to me, would be ideal.
I think Deep Space Nine definitely balanced that equation a lot better than what this show's doing. I absolutely agree with you, John, that this one it's not doing the episodic, it's not making the individual episodes themselves interesting as opposed to Twin Peaks. The Return, where you couldn't just watch episode 8, well, especially episode 8, but episode 5 or 10, you couldn't watch any individual episode and enjoy it on its own. You had to watch the whole thing. And right. I'm not saying this is a terrible idea, but it's different than what we're used to.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily opposed to that, but it would be refreshing. I would prefer it if there were standalone episodes.
I've got some listener feedback that I want to share before we close out. First of all, Rick, like I said, he couldn't be here tonight, but I asked him, if he had any thoughts on last night's episode he wanted me to relay. He said, I love Burnham more with each episode, but Saru stole the show this week.
Yeah, he's my favorite character.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. It's going to be interesting to see where they're going to go with that, because I think eventually, right now he's kind of got his problems with Michael, but I think they're eventually going to.
Let me ask you a question about the episode. And I guess this is for both of you. All right. I think we can safely assume that Lorca was giving Michael little tests like throughout the episode. I'm pretty sure the lunchroom fight was, you know, a test. And, you know, even the being on the shuttle, how do you deal with, okay, certain death? And, you know, the other prisoners were panicking and she was kind of sat there, which is not necessarily a good thing, but you know, she didn't panic, but she also kind of didn't care whether she lived or died. So, you know, so I think that was kind of a test. Do you think it was a test for her to break into the lab? Do you think he was, do you think he had a preferred whether she would or wouldn't?
I think he knew that she would. I mean, just telling her that she can't do it made him know that she would probably at least try. And it wasn't very hard for her to get in there. No. I think that's why she was put in a room with Sylvia Tilly to begin with, because he knew that that girl had access to the lab and she would figure out a way to use her to get in there, whether by manipulating her to let her in there or by doing what she did and collecting some of her slobber.
The proper term is mouth DNA. Thank you very much.
Oh, mouth DNA.
True.
I'm going with slobber. I'm leaning on team slobber on that one.
Let me share this this email. This is from Mary E. Freer, and this was on Facebook. She says, "Hi, I just finished listening to your review of the Discovery pilot. Great show. Nice to have so many of you giving us your opinions. I had seen and heard virtually nothing about the new series before it aired. Most of my knowledge came from the first half of your preview show. I hadn't watched the trailer, didn't want to get dragged into the abyss of fan fury, rather judge for myself on the product itself. I was pleasantly surprised at the second episode. I thought we'd only have one. I love the small callbacks to previous Star Trek in the theme and the sound effects. Appreciated that it doesn't have to bog itself down with trying to reimagine what has gone before. It's taking its own route. One complaint that I've noticed is the use of better tech in a prequel than in the original. I can't give a rat's arse, really. It enhances the show rather than detracting from me personally. However, it did lead me to wonder why they keep going backwards with Enterprise and now Discovery. I'd be interested to see something in the future of Star Trek as well as the prequels. Thanks for a great show. Look forward to the rest of the season. Mary." Thank you, Mary. And we've heard a lot of that. I mean, Skipper kind of said some of that in the beginning, that he'd rather go forward than go backward. I know you said that when you were on the Prime Directive a couple months back, but I think that if this show is successful, we may get something in the future, because they're already talking about doing a miniseries. And if they start doing miniseries like that, then maybe eventually they'll get to the future timeline. I'm guessing, but.
So all I needed to do to get you to read my email was sign it Mary. That's all I needed to do.
Awesome. Was that you?
Awesome.
You're so easy. And use the word arse.
And use the word arse.
Yeah. Yeah. And this one comes to us from email. And we don't have a Simply Syndicated Discovery After Show email, but if you want to email us, you can email us at the Cosmic Potato page. This is from Shane Thomas. He says, "Hi, everyone." This is kind of a long one. "Hi, everyone. These episodes were my first ever foray into any kind of Star Trek, which I largely enjoyed. If the show is going to succeed, then it depends heavily on bringing in people like me, as the big fans like yourselves will probably watch regardless. I can't imagine Rick's going out of his way to pay $7 a month for many other shows. One slight criticism was David Semmel's direction when we're introduced to Burnham and Georgiou. The camera was often too far away from both of them when they were conversing. When the storm is closing on them, I felt you needed to have a camera a lot closer to them, medium close-ups and close-ups, as that helps the tension build. We didn't get many reaction shots when one would speak to the other. My reason for highlighting this was that you're dropping us in a new world and new people we haven't met before. So let us actually see them and center the people over the spectacle. It didn't ruin the scene, but it should have been more gripping than it was. Adam Kane did a much better job of this in episode 2. He immediately begins the episode with tighter shots on the characters, which gives them a better chance to communicate their feelings to the audience, and sometimes positions the camera at an angle, giving the impression of something going wrong and being off kilter. Finally, on the topic of representation, when Burnham has her flyby in episode 1, alighting on the Klingon, Sonequa Martin-Green does a really good job of expressing excitement and wonder.
Of adventure. The only word to effectively describe it is wow. The way I'm sure the earlier incarnations of the show inflamed your personal sense of wonder, I think of the younger viewers who would have felt the same at that scene, especially young black girls. I wonder how many of them are now Trek fans for life. In his insightful email, I think Shane should be directing an episode. I have a voicemail, too.
Hi, folks. How you doing? I'm just calling about the Star Trek Discovery. I've seen the two first episodes. This is Jeff. They're amazing. I just want to say that as a lifelong Star Trek fan, I think this is more than I could have hoped for. I'm very, very happy with how they've come out. Some people were concerned with a lot of things, such as the Klingons, how they look. You know, here's my thought on the Klingons. What if the new look of the Klingons is the producer's way of kind of challenging Star Trek fans? You know, because as longtime Star Trek fans, we know the Klingons, you know, they're kind of a samurai or Viking type race, you know, warrior class, and we're very comfortable with them. So if they're reintroduced, you know, it's like, okay, we know who they are. You know, they're the samurai Viking race, and but if you change the look, you make them alien again, then that challenges us. That makes us look at them again. What is the backstory? Where do they really come from? What is their real motivation? Have we been just kind of stereotyping them as this warrior race without really understanding their motivation? And it allows a more nuanced portrayal of the race. So I'm loving it, and hope it continues to be as good as the first two shows were. So thank you.
So that was a voicemail. That was from Jeff. Sent it to us on our voicemail number. You guys, if you want to know, is area code 205-642-8380. I tried to make that spell something and it doesn't spell anything. Okay. And like I said, you can email us if you want to. That's mail@cosmicpotato.com. And, of course, we got the Facebook page, Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. You can leave us a message on there, and I'll share all those messages on the show. One thing I did want to mention before we ended was at the end of the episode, when Lorca is trying to talk Burnham into staying, he puts her in that booth and kind of transports her to all these different planets. One of them was Romulus. And if you remember in Balance of Terror on TOS, Spock said that no one from the Federation has had anything to do with the Romulans for at least 100 years since the end of the war. But obviously they have technology that they can just go to the Romulan homeworld anytime they feel like it. So I'm thinking that this is my prediction. Scott said last week that we might see Section 31 on this show. I don't think we're going to see Section 31. Yeah. I think that we may be seeing the birth of Section 31. I think that Section 31 may come from this technology. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you can go to an enemy homeworld instantly without them even knowing that you're there, just pop in, pop out, then there's obviously some room for some covert operations to be used with that technology. But that's just one man's prediction.
Unrelated note. I actually know that the after show, it was a rare occasion I was actually home when it aired live. So I tweeted in a question. He didn't ask it, though.
We'll ask us. See if we can answer it.
I'll give it a shot. My question was, how did I put it? Saru has like the threat ganglia. He has a spidey sense. Is his spider sense constantly tingling when he's around the captain, since the captain's obviously hiding something, or is he just inured to it at this point?
Not sure I understand the question.
The Saru, the science officer, has an innate sense of danger. He knows when, even when he doesn't know what the danger is, as seen this last episode when the prisoner shuttle was leaving, but his little threat thing still went off, and he didn't know why, but he discovered later it was because Burnham was still on the ship. So he knows, he senses danger or death or threats. So my question is that sense, is there anything about Captain Lorca, who's setting off Spidey Alert and everyone who's watching him, is that being triggered in some way by Saru? And if not, why not? Why would he even serve on a ship with him?
Hey, Sean, can you see why that question didn't get answered?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I think that
I want you on this ship.
I think that the answer is going to be whatever the plot needs it to be for that week. That's going to be
That's a bit unfair.
That's going to be one of those questions. Yeah, that's going to be one of those questions. That's just it's kind of like when is Michael a Vulcan and when is she a human? It's just whenever the plot needs her to be a Vulcan, she's going to be a Vulcan. Yeah. You know, so. I think that some of that stuff is going to get fleshed out over time, but we know that he has threat ganglia because we read it on the character stuff that came out before the show. He hasn't exactly explained that on the show. I think they're going to explain it in the next episode. I mean, he said that he can tell when death is coming or something like that. But as far as the stuff coming out of his neck, he hasn't actually explained it. Now, they are going to explain it in the next episode because I saw a clip. And
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I saw the clip right after the show.
Yeah, so
maybe
but you're waiting until episode 4 to really explain it. And you showed it to us at least once in this episode. And if you didn't read any of the character bio stuff, you might not know that that's what was happening. You know, but anyway, let's close this episode out and Skipper, thank you for being here.
Nah, come on, I ruined this, man.
No, you
I was
didn't.
Nothing. I took a whiz on everything. I stunk up the joint.
No, we definitely needed to look at it from the perspective of someone that is not as enamored of the fact that we have new Star Trek as we are. So your podcast is called the Castle Rock TV Podcast. You want to tell the audience a little bit about it?
With my host Christopher DeFilippis, we are gearing up for Hulu's 10 episode limited series coming out next year, which is all about the world of Stephen King. They are creating this anthology that's supposed to rub up against so many existing Stephen King properties and characters and things like that. And in a teaser trailer, they announced around 12 to 14 Stephen King stories that are going to make up, I guess, the backdrop of this new series. So to prepare for the new series, we are going through all of those properties. We already covered It, and we're now doing Salem's Lot. Then we're doing Creepshow, Misery, Green Mile, Shawshank, and all these others that were basically announced. And we're going to go through the movies, the novels, so on and so forth, to get completely ready so when the show drops, we can be know-it-all assholes and know all the little things that they're dropping in there and all the characters, and we can really know what's going on and then explain it to other people. People who aren't nearly as bright and smart and funny as us. That's the idea. That's over at CRTV Pod. CRTVpodcast.com, and we're currently on, I think, our 8th episode, and we're having a lot of fun, and hopefully if you're a Stephen King fan, you can come on over and check us out. I'm not nearly as negative over there. Really, I'm not. I'm serious. I'm not.
So you guys go check that out. And Christopher's supposed to be on this show next week. So,
he'll class up the joint. he'll make up for my negativity, right? Right.
What were you about to say, John?
In college, I was an art major and an English minor, and the reason I pursued those things is because at some point someone told me that there is no wrong answer in art or English. As long as you can explain why you made your choice or whatever, then you're right. Skipper, you're fine. You had good reasons for the hate of a thousand suns that blisters between our phones.
So as long as I just didn't go sit over here with my arms crossed, I didn't like it.
You're stupid. That was stupid.
You were stupid.
You were stupid.
Why? Because I said so. And you're not changing my mind.
You're stupid too.
Well, I certainly hope I didn't come across that way to anyone. My apologies, by the way. You know, for all the fans out there who are loving the show and tuning in, going, "Man, that Skipper's an asshole." Well, fortunately, you won't have to put up with me next week. But that's where Chris will come in.
That's what I'm saying, it's totally fine.
Oh, like, yeah, no, it was great.
I'm never going to shy away from a good discussion.
And by the way, if you, I'm so curious to see where the show goes. I can't say I'm going to tune in week to week. I might. It hasn't grabbed me in that way. It seems to be the kind of show. Personally, I'm just kind of annoyed that I want the show to grab me more. And since it's not, and since I already fucking paid for it, I think I'll wait a good 5 or 6 episodes and then take them all in one big shot and try to avoid the online spoilers and see if it really grabs me. But I mean, it really isn't that much money. I think my pocketbook can handle it, but in the meantime, I've got other things to do. It's not something that I'm dying. Oh, I can't wait until next. No, that's not happening. But you know, when I got a nice chunk of episodes, I'd like to get caught up and I hope to be surprised.
Yeah. They're going to take a break after the first week of November. They're going to take a break until January. So you can let them build up until then, and then over the holidays, binge the 4 or 5 episodes that you haven't watched, and see if you like where it's going from there. But everybody, if you want to hear John and I and Rick talk about stuff other than Star Trek, you can check us out at Cosmic Potato, the Superfan Talk podcast, over at cosmicpotato.com. It's on iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud and all those good places, and this show, Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show, is available on iTunes as well, and over at simplysyndicated.com. Go over there, listen to some of those podcasts. There's a ton of podcasts on that site. Rick hosts probably 12 of them.
Shit.
No, Rick really does host like 3 or 4 shows over on that network. But yeah, go check that out. And until next week. Next week's episode has a really funky title. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick before I...
The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. That's a weird title for a Star Trek episode, so I'm looking forward to seeing what that means.
Can't wait for that. What's that mean? I don't know.
I'm loving it, actually.
It's different.
All right. Well, that's it. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for joining us for Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show. Your feedback is welcome. Leave us a comment and review on iTunes or follow us on Facebook. The views and opinions stated on this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of Simply Syndicated, CBS, Paramount Pictures, or their sponsors. Star Trek Discovery is owned by CBS and has no affiliation with Simply Syndicated or this podcast. No infringement of copyrighted material is intended. Be sure to join us again next week as we analyze another episode of Star Trek Discovery, here on Simply Syndicated's Discovery After Show.